to Shattering Mess. Here is a victimless crime. Mumbai, India. A pre-dawn stampede killed 18 people as tens of thousands of people gathered to mourn the death of a Muslim spiritual leader and India's financial capital. At least 40 others were seriously injured in the stampede. When the mourners thronged to the home of Mohammed Burhanuddin, the head of the Dawoodi Bohra Muslim community. Dawood is an interesting character in the history of Islam. There are five sources that date within 200 years of Muhammad's death that are universally viewed as the most authentic, the most credible sources that Islam has. Dawood is not one of them. Came along much later. And the purpose of Dawood was to serve as a means to soften Islam. Because the five oldest sources, which are comprised of the Quran, the Hadith compiled topically by Bukhari and Muslim, as well as the two chronological collections of Hadith, one by Ishaq, the other by Tabari. Collectively and individually, they depict Muhammad as a ruthless terrorist, as a pedophile, as a rapist, as a slave trader, and as a kidnapper, as a liar. Muhammad's depiction in those five sources, along with the depiction of his God Allah, is to be perverted. And so the purpose of Dawood was to create a revisionist impression. And so these people are basing their religion on a revisionist characterization of the actual individual. It's very much like Christianity with Paul's letters. Paul's depiction of Yahusha is wholly corrupt, not based on anything he said or did. And so the religion that has spawned from those letters is based upon a myth, just as is the case with Dawood. Now, in this particular case, you've got this Muslim spiritualist who is leading everyone who listens to him astray. He's deceiving everyone. And he is like most of these idiots. He got his job by inheriting it from his dad. And so for these Muslims to go and mourn for a man who misled them makes it a victimless crime. Yeah, it's a tragedy that so many people were killed and murdered, but what good was going to be their lives if they're this easily reverent of someone who was deliberately, knowingly deceiving them? What value was there? Another story. This takes us back into Syria, where we began this morning. There is an interesting turn of events in Syria. We don't know really how significant this is, but the Sunni rebels that are fighting in Syria, the two largest groups of Sunni rebels are comprised of al-Nusra, the Victory Front, fundamentalist Muslims, and the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, who are very similar in their ideology. The two started to kill one another, to literally attack one another here fairly recently. And the carnage is fairly significant, according to Western news sources. Nearly 700 people have been killed in Syria in 9 days of these clashes between the two Islamist rebel groups. Now, CNN, this is really interesting because the CNN refers to one of the groups as an Al-Qaeda affiliate and the other as Islamist, which is to say that you're distinguishing Al-Qaeda from an Islamist group. Now, if you were to ever make any positive rational and informed depiction of Al-Qaeda, it would first and foremost be Islamist. And yet they're distinguishing Al-Qaeda from an Islamist group. The Al-Nusra Front is Islamist, they're saying, and it is. But Al-Qaeda, of course, would be Islamist. Now, what's interesting here is that CNN agreed with the New York Times when the New York Times claimed that Ansar Sharia in Benghazi, the Islamic terrorist group that planned and perpetrated the attack and murder of the American ambassador, they said that it was not affiliated with Al-Qaeda. So CNN's position is that Ansar Sharia was not affiliated with Al-Qaeda. And yet its founder, whose name means intoxicating leaf of Allah, by way of his public letters, has proven that he is closer and vastly more loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the lone Al-Qaeda representative, than any other Islamic terrorist in the world. But now that it's in support of Madam Clinton and Barack Hussein Obama and not a conspiratorial attempt to exonerate the guilty, the Islamic State of Iraq, now the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, is being affiliated with Al-Qaeda, even though both CNN and the New York Times reported that Osama bin Laden's despised the Islamic State of Iraq, chastising it and disassociating from it. And now the Islamic State of Iraq is completely rejecting the pleas of Ayman Zawahiri, something both media outlets have also reported. So they either don't consider the news they themselves present as being relevant, or they're incapable of making the connections between their own stories. Now, by the way, this is simply Sunnis murdering Shias with American weapons. It is the nature of the death cult known as Islam. Muhammad and his pet rock Allah were unable to give Muslims a reason to live, only a reason to kill. From what city and country did... Now, this is rather important. It is from one city, Damascus, as we spoke yesterday, that, and Syria, that Muslims, during the glory years of the Sunni control of Islam, this is where they ruled. And so they ruled from Damascus, Syria, over everything from northwestern Africa and Spain to India. And so it is incumbent upon us to make the same connection, that those who oppose the brutal regime of Assad, their goal is to do what was done once before, was to unite the Islamic world under Sunni Islam, following the example of Muhammad, and make that capital, once again, Damascus. The article from CNN reads, forces from Al-Qaeda-affiliated Islamic State of Iraq and Syria have increasingly come in contact with the Free Syrian Army fighters and other hardline factions opposing the Syrian regime while ISIS attempts to impose its strict form of Islamic Sharia law on areas coming under its control in northern Syria. Well, there is no Free Syrian Army. That's a myth that promoted more by Senator John McClown of Arizona than anybody else. There are no Free Syrian Army fighters. Matter of fact, when they tried 3 months ago to promote that myth and to even have the world was ready to provide even more weapons, Europe and the United States, to the Free Syrian Army, the Al-Nusra Front and the Islamic State of Iraq and the other 20 largest fundamentalist Islamic jihadi groups fighting in Syria all said no. We're not going to unify under a secular banner. We're not fighting for freedom. We're fighting for Islam. We are all fighting for the same thing. We want to impose Sharia law. We want to eradicate the Shias and replace the Shia government with a Sunni government. Their own press conference at the notion there was such thing as a Free Syrian Army, even when they were offered weapons, if they would just pretend that they were a Free Syrian Army, they said, no, we can't do that. Both sides ISIS, and al-Nusra, and every other Islamic jihadi group fighting in Syria wants the same thing. The imposition of Sharia law and an Islamic government. And by the way, there is no such thing as a strict form of Islamic Sharia law. Sharia law is Islamic. It is strict. There is no liberal version of Sharia. There is no moderate version of Sharia. And there is no version of Sharia that is not Islamic. The victims include 351 combatants from the Islamist and non-Islamist rebel battalions. So here they've even contradicted themselves. They said that one group was Al-Qaeda and the other group was Islamist. And now they're saying there's a non-Islamist rebel battalion. They say there's 246 ISIS fighters. That's the Islamic State of Iraq. They are Islamist. And 100 civilians that have been killed. So it's 351 from al-Nusra and other Islamist rebel groups, 246 from ISIS, and 100 civilians, comprising the over 700 that were killed last week. Virtually all Christian and secular citizens of Syria recognize that their only hope for survival is for the Islamic rebels to fail, which is why there are no non-Islamist rebel battalions. This says among the 100 civilians that were killed, 21 were executed by ISIS in the Children's Hospital in the northern rebel stronghold of Aleppo. Now, you're going to find that there's going to be a huge outrage at these pictures that show Assad torturing those that he has incarcerated. And rightfully so. But where is the outrage for the 100 civilians that were murdered by the Islamic State in Iraq in the children's hospital? Isn't that worse? And when you're dealing with two groups where one is savage beyond imagination and the other is even worse, why would you even consider engaging on one side to oppose the other? One side to empower. CNN says they cannot independently verify the daily death tolls, but the United Nations has said that more than 100,000 people have been killed in Syria since 2011. Well, you know, before the Sunnis took up arms against the secular regime, the world media was welcome in Damascus. There were a lot of broadcasts from Damascus, but now they're all gone. What do you suppose changed? Free press? No free press. Only thing that's different is the onslaught of Sunni Mujahideen, Sunni jihadists against the government. And government's repulsive. But there was a free press, and now there is none. You're supporting the rebels. What would you be supporting? The violence came, the CNN article reads, as the Friends of Syria, a group of foreign ministers, including the U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, convened in Paris on Sunday in a last-ditch effort attempt to persuade the Syrian opposition to attend the peace conference in Geneva. It's interesting here that the Friends of Syria group is a group that the rebels don't recognize. They finally got one group of rebels to say, all right, we'll send a representative, but, you know, we really don't want to go. We have nothing in common with them. We don't share their agenda. You know, we'd be a complete fraud there. And most recently, the United Nations has said, well, you know, it is a proxy war between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Maybe we should invite Iran if we're going to have a discussion as to how to simmer this thing down. But Kerry, as a friend of Syria, has said, no, you can't invite Iran. And yet, at the same time, he's trying to negotiate with Iran on a nuclear deal. Well, if you connect the dots, the opposition has been reluctant to attend because the Friends of Syria is a secular entity and does not represent their agenda. The Western-backed rebels are deeply divided on whether they will go, and just recently said, maybe, I'm not sure, Maybe we'll send somebody. This is what Kerry said recently. There is no military solution to the violence. Kerry said this on Sunday. There is no alternative to saving the nation of Syria than negotiations. Okay. If Kerry says there is no military solution, then why did Kerry become the central advocate in the United States, in fact, in the world, for bombing Syria? He was the mouthpiece of the Obama administration for wanting to bomb Damascus. And yet he says now that there's no military solution? Well, why would you want to bomb Damascus if there's no military solution, Secretary Kerry? So he says the solution is only to negotiate. Well, how are you going to negotiate a settlement here? Assad can't step down. If he steps down, he will immediately be tried as a war criminal. Assad is correctly believes that he is in Syria's best interest in the sense of the fact that it is fundamentalist Islamic terrorists that are opposing him. And that if they prevail, anyone who is not a Sunni Muslim is going to be slaughtered. He's right. And so he's going to fight to the death. He's going to recognize what happens when the world takes this position. You're going to be tried in The Hague or you're going to be assassinated. There's a 0% chance that he's going to step down. None. The Sunnis who have a military there, the Shias who have a military there, they're not going to step down because they know they're going to be slaughtered by the Sunnis if they do. The Sunnis are convinced they're on a mission from Allah to kill the Shiite infidels and to reestablish a one-world government under Sharia law. They're religious zealots. You can't negotiate with someone who is religious. And as a fundamentalist Muslim, they're the living embodiment of the Treaty of Hudaybiyah. They've read the ninth surah of the Quran. They know how the eighth surah leads to the ninth. They understand that. They understand that in Islam, any treaty between a Muslim is not binding, and a Muslim and a non-Muslim is not binding on the Muslim. Why doesn't Kerry understand that? In a statement, the alliance of mainly Western and Gulf Arab countries called on the armed rebels to respect democratic and pluralistic values and to allow humanitarian access. Well, the Sunni Mujahideen have never allowed humanitarian access. That's why there's no free media there. That's why there's no means to provide humanitarian aid. And they don't respect democratic values because Islam means submission. Yes, so the Western and Arab Gulf countries are calling on the armed groups, which are comprised entirely on the Sunni side, to respect democratic and pluralistic values. They're fighting as Sunni Muslims against Shia Muslims. Now, what do you think that the odds are that somebody who's engaged in a civil war, murdering, raping, plundering, everybody of the same religion but of a different sect of the same religion, is going to respect pluralistic values? Now, what do you think that someone who has devoted themselves to Allah's cause, and the Quran says that there is no freedom, that Allah has chosen the religion, and that Islam actually means submission. That somebody who is so devoted to a religion named submission that they're willing to kill and be killed, that they're going to respect democratic values. You know, this is kind of like reaching your hand out while asking a hungry rattlesnake to respect the mouse's right to live. The article reads, it condemned the presence of foreign fighters in Syria, both those fighting with the regime, such as Hezbollah, and the Iranian-backed forces, and those fighting within other extremist groups, and demanded their immediate withdrawal. So it's okay for Sunni Muslims in Syria to be armed to the hilt with Western weapons to fight the government. But it's not okay for other Sunni Muslims who just happen to live across the border in Iraq or who live in Libya to fight on behalf of their Sunnis, fellow Sunnis. I mean, what in the world are they thinking here? That it's okay that that Syrians kill Syrians en masse with foreign weapons, and it's okay for us to supply weapons, but it's not okay for someone who is not a Syrian to wield one of those weapons. The battle isn't about Syria. This statement completely belies all understanding. This fight isn't about Syria. It's not about the Syrian people. It's not about the government of Syria. You know, why doesn't anyone in a position of power recognize the obvious? This is Shiite versus Sunni. This is a 1,400-year-old war between the two contrasting sects of Islam. Syria is simply the battleground. And it's not the only battleground. This war is now being fought throughout the Islamic world. It's not about Syria. It's about Sunni versus Shia. And this battle re-erupted because the United States artificially empowered Iran and thus Shia Islam over Sunni Islam. The Western commentators also urged democratic opposition forces to keep opposing groups affiliated with Al-Qaeda. There are no democratic opposition forces. There were none in Egypt. There were none in Tunisia. There were none in Libya. There are none in Syria. It's a myth. There are Muslims killing Muslims, and Muslims are not democratic. You know, when the Egyptians were finally given a chance to vote, 65% of them voted for the most fundamentalist Islamic candidate. Every place in the Islamic world, when you give Muslims an opportunity to vote, the cleric tells them that if they don't vote for the most fundamentalist Islamic candidate, that Allah will see to it that they're tortured in hell. Not knowing any better, they do what they're told. There is no democratic opposition in Syria. And there is no presence of Al-Qaeda. You've got fundamentalist Sunni Muslims killing Shia Muslims. This says we fully support the Supreme Military Council of the Free Syrian Army, as a mythical agency, of course, and the Democratic Opposition Forces, another myth, and their action against the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. It said the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant is another name for ISIS, this reads. So, in Iraq, the United States armed the Shias so that they could have advanced heavy weapons, attack helicopters, tanks, artillery, Hellfire missiles, to kill the Sunni jihadists. And in Syria, America is arming the Sunni jihadists with anti-aircraft weaponry, missiles, and the like, to go off and kill the Shia government. And what we think that this battle is about freedom fighters against a dictator and freedom fighters against Al-Qaeda. Is there any wonder the world's in such a mess when people can't think? Even here, Al-Qaeda's lone spokesperson, their sole surviving leader, Ayman al-Zawahiri, is telling the Sunnis in the al-Nusra front, the victory front, and the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, both of whom now are allegedly allied with Al-Qaeda to stop fighting one another, and yet they aren't listening, meaning that there's no affiliation, no command and control. In Iraq, where at least 9 people were killed and more than 40 wounded in several car explosions on Sunday. By the way, those car explosions were all perpetrated by the Sunni jihadists. Security forces in Mosul said that they have detained 137 ISIS suspects in a series of raids on the city. You know, it has spread from Iraq to Syria as a result of America's invasion, and it has spilled over into Lebanon, into Libya, into Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, to Qatar, to Bahrain, to Abu Dhabi, to Dubai, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Pakistan, Somalia, and Turkey. It is spread throughout the Caucasus regions and everywhere else that Shias mix with Sunnis. Now, the Pentagon is considering a proposal to train Iraqi forces, these would be Shiite forces, on counterterrorism operations in Jordan. So here again, the United States wants to send more weapons and to train the Iraqi Shias to kill Iraqi Sunnis, and they want to do so training them in Jordan, and then in between those two places in Syria, where the Shia are attacking Sunnis, we want to provide more arms to the Sunnis. It's pure insanity. It's grotesque immorality. We have become the merchants of death. This is a quote from the Pentagon. And certainly in the light of what we're seeing happening on the ground in Iraq, U.S. military leaders are pushing harder to begin training in Jordan. But wasn't that the way that the United States was suckered into the Vietnam conflict? Doesn't the U.S. Central Command know that when this occurs, the U.S. will be arming and training both sides in Syria? Everyone with half a brain ought to be able to figure this out. Now, speaking of hypocritical, CNN reports that Egypt's army chief, General Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, said Saturday that he would run for president if the Egyptian people wanted him to. Yeah, perfect. The fellow who cratered the only democratically elected government in Egypt within the last 100, maybe many hundreds of years. And he cratered it by establishing a military coup, now claims to be the champion of democracy. El-Sisi, the country's defense minister, said that if I run for the presidency, it would be by request of the people and by mandate from my army, as we work within a democracy. So a military dictatorship is now defined as working within a democracy. The country has seen months of political turmoil since its first democratically elected president, Mohamed Morsi, of the Muslim Brotherhood, was deposed by the military in July, with an interim military-backed government, which was installed in its place. And since the time that Sisi's goons, have taken over for Morsi's morons, those murdered by the government forces has skyrocketed. Protests are harshly put down. Opposing parties have now been outlawed. Opposition voices are imprisoned. The media is being terrorized. Christians are being annihilated. So vote for the perpetrator if you like what he's done so far. How's that for a campaign platform? Yes, and Sisi has perpetrated a military coup. The government has murdered far more people. Protests are now harshly put down. Opposing parties are actually outlawed. Opposition voices are imprisoned. The media worldwide is being terrorized, and Christians and their churches are being annihilated. Yep. So vote for the perpetrator if you like what he's done so far. In a recent ruling, this took place a couple of weeks ago. I've been delayed in sharing it with you, but in a recent ruling, Judge Edward Corman ruled that your cell phone, your laptop, and other electronic devices can be legally searched and seized by the government within 100 miles of any border. This means that within this constitutional exemption zone for your Fourth Amendment right, the Bill of Rights in the Fourth Amendment prohibits unreasonable searches and seizures and requires a warrant to be judicially sanctioned, and that warrant has to be supported by probable cause. But all of that's null and void. This is a federal judge that only can rule on the Constitution, and he's saying, let's just ignore the U.S. Constitution. Now, Congress has since expanded this policy to include 100 miles inland from all borders and established 33 checkpoints in which people are stopped and asked to prove their citizenship, and their personal belongings are sifted through with a complete disregard for the Fourth Amendment. 197.4 million Americans now live within the 100-mile Constitution exemption zone. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. In Kabul, Afghanistan, President Helmut Karzai has authorized the release of 72 prisoners that are seen as a security threat by the United States. The issue here is what is the reason that they were in prison? They're fundamentalist Muslims. Therefore, they are jihadists. So according to Sharia law, according to Afghanistan's interpretation of Islamic law, they're not prisoners. They're not criminals. They're freedom fighters in the sense that they're fighting for the freedom of Islam to suppress everyone under Sharia law. They are religious heroes. It's like in the West Bank. Town squares are named after the suicide bombers that kill Jewish women and children. The U.S. State Department has disagreed with the decision. These 72 detainees are dangerous criminals against whom there is strong evidence linking them to terrorism-related crimes, including the use of improvised explosive devices. The largest killer of Afghan citizens, says Jean Paskey, a State Department spokesperson. She said this at her news conference. These insurgents who pose threats to the safety and security of the Afghan people and the state are being released without an investigation, without the use of the criminal justice system in accordance with Afghan law, State Department said. But the problem here is that from an Islamic perspective, from a Sharia perspective, these jihadists are fighting in Allah's cause, and they're their heroes. So one man's terrorist is another man's mujahideen. You know, Jen, the problem here is that you don't understand Islam. From their perspective, they're doing what their law, what their religion mandates. It just happens to be the opposite of what you think is appropriate. That you look at a person exploding an improvised device as a bad person. They look at it as a hero, as a person killing the infidels for the benefit of Islam. You know, Helmut Karzai is corrupt. He's not stupid. He recognizes that if he aids and abets the Taliban, if he releases any member of the Taliban that the Taliban once released, then he and his family won't be hunted down and killed by the Taliban. And all he wants to do at this point is he wants to leave Afghanistan rich and alive. And so he's doing what he must do to survive. Now, the prisoner release comes amid a period of broader tensions between Washington and Kabul over Karzai's current unwillingness to sign a bilateral security agreement to keep some U.S. and other coalition troops in Afghanistan after this year. Karzai has said that he won't sign the deal until certain conditions are met, including an end to U.S. raids on Afghan homes and the release of Afghan prisoners from Guantanamo Bay. The U.S. says, yeah, we're not going to do that. But fun is war if you can't raid homes, if you can't bomb homes. If we can't use our bombs and our bullets, what fun is it? No, we don't want to do that. Now, the reality is the issues are far more than an end to U.S. raids on Afghan homes, which is counterproductive for America anyway. It has all to do with what form of judicial system will America's troops be held accountable to. Sharia, which is the antithesis of everything that we've brought up to value in the West, or American law. And the Afghanis are insisting upon Sharia. That was the same thing that existed in Iraq. And the Iraqis said, you know, it was, you'll either be tried, Americans will be tried under the judicial system of Islam, or you can't stay here. Same issue. Wasn't resolved successfully, and Iraq won't be resolved successfully here. And that's just the tip of the Quran. There are some 100 requirements that have been stipulated by Afghanistan, all designed to rid Afghanistan of anything un-Islamic, which would include America's presence. The judiciary meeting chaired by Karzai tasked the Afghanistan Criminal Cases Review Commission with releasing the 72 prisoners, and it also asked the review for the commission to review the cases of 16 other inmates in prison against whom the spy agency says there is as evidence. So the CIA says, oh, we've got to keep them there. We kidnapped them fair and square, and Islam says release them.